public schools, schools run by the government. From 1968 to 1974. And then I went, I said for my, you know, every, from elementary school, high school, and junior high school, you have to take exams in order to go to the next steps. So I took my exams in the South, and I was admitted into high school, the junior high school, that is.
Okay.
And it's called Waw Alif. That was in Arabic. It's like, you know, Waw Junior High School A, because there are other high school, and they titled them like A, B, C.
Okay.
Based
and that's
on,
where you were born, too.
Yeah, I was born in Waw.
And how do you spell that?
W-A-U.
Okay, just curious.
Yeah. And, but the junior high school, the system there, you know, like the elementary school is 6 years, and then junior high school, 3 years, and then high school, 3 years, and then you go to the university after that. But from 1974, actually I went to junior high school in Waw only for a year, and then I moved back to Khartoum in 1975, and I enrolled in a junior high school there in Khartoum called Abd al-Munim Junior High until 1977. Then I moved up to for a year in Khartoum High School. I spent a year there, and then I went to boarding school the following year, which was 1976-77. To a boarding school, to a school called Hantoub. It's about 150 miles away from Khartoum.
Uh-huh.
That was a boarding school.
Okay.
And I stayed there until 1980.
Uh-huh.
And I sat for my Sudan certificate examinations there. These are the examinations. If you do very well,
yeah,
you go to Khartoum University.
Right.
If you don't do very well, but you get a degree, you pass the exams,
right,
but not really top.
Okay.
You could either have a scholarship given to you by the government to go abroad. Most of the countries, especially Egypt, the eastern countries, they give Sudanese government a lot of scholarship for these kind of things.
Uh-huh.
So, and then also that is based on competition. The higher degree, the better chances you have to go to, or to get these scholarships. I passed exams, but I wasn't accepted to Khartoum University.
Oh.
And also I didn't apply to scholarships because I knew what countries, you know, these would be.
What countries?
Probably Egypt, or mostly Arab countries or Eastern countries, you know.
Okay.
East European countries, and I didn't want to go there. So my father sent me to England for a year, and I went to an English school called Anglowell in Cambridge.
Oh.
And I stayed there for a year from 1980 to 1981.
Uh-huh.
And then, by then, I got an acceptance to go to Santa Barbara City College.
So you pretty much touched up your English pretty well.
Yeah, when I came here, yeah.
By the time you'd come here, you knew English.
Yeah, right? Oh yes, oh yes. So I went to City College for 2 years from
just Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara City College from 1981 to 1984. And then I transferred to University of California, Santa Barbara.
It's 3 years, 1981.
Yeah, 1980, yeah. And I transferred at the end of that year, 1984 to 1986. I got my BA degree from there.
University
of Santa Barbara. And then in the fall of 1986, I was accepted to come to Madison, and I came right away. So from 86 to 88,
You've been.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad we got that.
Good.
Because I feel that I was a little hazy on that. I wanted to ask you, you said a friend suggested that you go into the Center for Development.
Yeah.
Did you get advice from, on this from the Foreign Students Office, or?
No, not really. I mean, my advice was from my friend, and I wish I had talked to a lot more people, to just know what kind of program I was getting into. It was really something we've done in the last minute because I applied to law school, I wasn't accepted. I mean, my application wasn't considered. So what should we do? It was either I go back to the Sudan for a year or enroll in a program like this, and then switch. So I, opted for coming here and enroll. So I really didn't talk to any advisor about the program or anything like that. And
Did you reapply to law school after that?
no, I mean, in the interim, I changed my mind. I thought, I got tired of school, and also I looked at my financial situation, and I didn't want to get involved into a program where I know I will not be able to get any money to
Okay.
sponsor.
So you say you got tired of school, but were you tired of the Center for Development too?
Exactly. I mean, it's. I think I was discouraged by the Center for Development because here I was, spending a year taking courses or in a program that wasn't really that great, I thought, or academically. So Center for Development is more technical than academic, in a sense that the theories that you really learn are all development theories, and they're all based on technical what to do and how should you develop a country or things like that. And I mean, it wasn't really totally a failure. I mean, I learned a lot from the development, but that wasn't something I was prepared for.
You wanted
And
more theoretical
no, I
background?
wanted more. You see, I told you, Center for Development is really attached from other departments. It's not. You feel like if you are in the economics department or political science department or the history department, you have a base. You have professors that you talk to. Center for Development doesn't have professors of their own, and you feel like you really. You don't have a base.
So how did you choose courses and professors then?
What happens was that at the beginning of every semester, you would talk to your advisor, and he would suggest a number of courses, and then you would select whichever, fits your schedule. And I'm sure, I chose courses that were not that good. And I mean, the advising wasn't really good. It wasn't.
You think it assumed that you knew more than you did, or?
Or no, not that. They just assume that all these courses, they have a number of courses, and they assume if you take any courses out of these, it's all serving the purpose of the program that they having. So it's
I
no
see.
big. They weren't really trying to select courses that really suits you. I mean, they were selecting courses that would they would ask, what did you do? So say, I work for the government. So they would say, okay, why don't you take public administration? Or why don't you, do you have a good background in economics? And you would say, no. And say, okay, why don't you take this course? Things like that. But, I mean, in other programs, they know, they kind of, they really set you up, they put you on steps, like in political science, so maybe you should take theoretical courses, and then you take these, and you take these, and you take these. And then at the end, you take countries, but then you have a good base
You
on
feel that you,
theories, and you feel like you really know you are well prepared. In the Center for Development, you feel like you're grasping things from the middle because, I mean,
You feel that the program needed more structure as
oh
far as
yeah,
you are
so
concerned.
definitely, definitely, definitely.
Did you write any research
Oh
papers?
yeah, from these courses, yes.
How did that go? Did you find those hard or?
Writing research papers. First, when I came, especially my first research paper ever, that was at City College. That was a nightmare. I didn't know how to write a research paper, first of all. I didn't know what the professor expects. What do you say in a research paper? So I was really nervous, and was a terrible experience. But when I came here, the research papers, they were not hard, but the grading was hard. Because actually they say, pick whatever subject you want, right?
Yeah.
And then the professor had a certain expectations, but you are doing certain thing. You have a certain ideas of what you really want to do. Of course, you know, they encourage you to come and talk to them. But if you're taking three courses, I mean, and you doing exams and you're going to classes and things like that, I could have, but because of my studies habits, you know, I didn't really feel that I should go to the professor and try to show him what I'm trying to do before I turn in my paper. Most of the time I wrote my paper in the last minute. And
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And generally I knew exactly what they want, and I developed a technique of studying the professor from when, how he teaches and things like that. And then I will write a paper based on that, you know?
Did you ever think that you weren't getting enough out of those papers? Because
papers?
You were doing that?
Yeah, the papers actually were not for me.
Really?
I really didn't think I was, one paper that I wrote was for me. It was this last semester paper. I was really into it because it's something I was interested in,
uh-huh.
You know? All the other papers that I wrote last 2 years,
uh-huh.
I can remember only one that I was really interested in, and it was something that had something to do with the Sudan. Two papers, actually. And but the other papers, they were just technical. You know, I had to do 1, 2, 3, 4, and I did those steps, and that's all.
Uh-huh.
But it.
So these weren't real research papers where you go out and research a topic and then...
Oh, they were. But even though they were research papers, you know, the topics themselves
mm-hmm.
were not to my interest, you know, but I had to do them for the class.
You're defining your interests only in terms of the Sudan?
No, I mean, I said, you know, those papers were really... I was into it because they had something to do with the Sudan.
Yeah.
That's why I got excited, finally, because, you know, I was looking into these... And mainly because maybe I chose wrong courses, you know, as
I said.
So
the papers you just tried to do it was expected of you were the papers that didn't have anything to do with the Sudan?
Most courses, yeah, they didn't. I mean, I could have, but actually I try to make things a little exciting for myself, you know. I tried to break away from the Sudan and do some other papers, you know.
Uh-huh.
I did a paper on Kenya, National Plan, and...
I guess what I'm wondering is why weren't some of the papers interesting to you?
Because I don't know, because actually they were not, I wasn't interested in the subject itself.
The subject of development?
Of the development or of the course.
Okay.
I think that's why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there social life in the center for development? Did you hang out with people over there?
No, not for me.
Yeah.
And the Center for Development is only foreign students, and also it's a certain kind of, there are only few younger single students in the Center for Development. The majority of the students are married, older.
Older than you?
Older. And they have work experience, they have governmental work experience, and it was difficult to really, you know, socialize with them because we came from a different background completely.
Nevertheless, did some of these students feel the same way that you did about the classes and so on?
No, I think I was, to me, because I went here, you know, I did my undergraduate degree here.
In the United States?
In the United States.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So they were excited, you know, to have these courses. I wasn't excited because I knew there, you know, there is something better,
uh-huh.
you know, in this university. To them, they didn't. And also, you know, it's a cultural thing, you know, if the advisor says something, you do it, you don't question it. So they were always, you know, doing what the advisors, you know,
right.
tells them. I felt different, you know, I knew, I did what the advisor said, but I wasn't satisfied. You know, I had to do it.
So did you end up studying a lot of the time or no?
No, not a lot of the time. I read things that were interesting to me.
Where did you do your reading?
Where? I went to a memorial in Helen C. White. And then, of course, you know, I had to go to Steinbeck Library, because if I was writing a paper on agriculture or any development, a lot of material are there in the land, tenure center. But I didn't go there a lot, no. I would go there once, get all the material that I wanted at that time, and then, so that I don't have to go back again.
Oh.
You know, and bring them to my apartment and keep them. And, I mean, I'm still thinking about, you know, why those courses or why the topic research were not interesting. It's because I think I was free to choose whatever topic to write. But also I had to choose a topic that is relevant to the course. And most of the time these topics were not really, I had to force myself to write something that would, especially if I wanted to do well, I had to choose something that was relevant to the course. And that's why, so I was forcing myself, in other words.
Well, at least then that was something good that
came out. Oh yeah.
Did you use the reserve library?
Yes, especially last year, yeah. Last year.
And were you somebody who'd like to study during the day or at night?
I would study at night, actually. You know, and usually I like to study at least 2 hours before I go to bed. That's actually when I look at my school material.
And you said also that you used to hang out at the periodical room.
Yes, that's my favorite place actually to go to.
What would you do there?
Because I would read about foreign newspapers, foreign magazines, especially, you know, African magazines. That's where I would find them. Helen C. White doesn't have them.
Yeah.
And Helen C. White doesn't have foreign newspapers. So I would go to periodicals and sit there and read.
Were you interested in the United States news also?
Oh yeah, newspapers, yeah. I am a newspaper junkie a little bit. I liked reading a lot of newspapers and magazines, uh-huh. You know. And that's what happened. Before I studied, I would spend an hour or two reading papers. I mean, newspapers and magazine before I do my schoolwork. So sometimes it was a way to, I would study home so I don't get distracted by going to the periodical room. But I liked it.
That's interesting because, I mean, do you think that had something to do with your studies in some way? Did you integrate it in any way, the current events that were going on now at the time?
Oh yes. In different, more than once, well, three courses, it was relevant that I read the current events and things like that. Yeah.
Did you go to the student housing office when you were having trouble in Saxony?
No, because somebody told me that they wouldn't, for a house, you have to be married, and I wasn't married.
Housing board listings at the
I didn't check that. I really didn't know. No. And also once I signed the contract it was useless for me to look other places because
for the next year
because I had you know, I met friends and they were looking for an apartment and they were looking for somebody to stay with them. So I said I would be willing to. And so and that's why I ended up with a shitty place anyway. I should have looked for myself.
Uh-huh.
I took the lazy way.
Did Did you ever hang out at the Memorial Union and go get food there and stuff?
Yes, yes. I ate a lot of my lunches there.
You did?
Yeah. I ate a lot of my lunches there. And in the evenings, like, if there were good bands, I would go there. Yeah. I mean, you would go to the Memorial, say, from 8 to 10 or 11, and then maybe go to a disco till 12. They used to close at 12:30 then. Then go to a private party after that.
Yeah.
That's the first year was like that here.
Yeah, so you did the first year.
Yeah.
Did that help you meet people and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. But then they were all limited people. I mean, there, after a while, I ended up knowing all of them. And but I wasn't bored with them at all. It was good because they were all, especially after coming from Santa Barbara where there were no foreign students. I came here and there were a lot of foreign students. So partying with them was really good.
A lot of foreign students went to these parties?
Oh, yes. Usually, I mean, African students would go to African parties or parties that they think they would have a good time. And those parties are always parties where they could dance and listen to good music. So, and we usually know by Friday, people, there's a party this place, there's a party this place. And you just go.
Were crowds mixed in with white Americans?
Oh yeah, there are white American students, yes. Actually more white American students than black American students in those parties.
Huh.
And also, I think this is where the difference comes, black and Africans. Africans, they want to impose their music so they can dance to. Black Americans, they want to play their music so they can dance to. And each group can dance to others' music, for so long, and then they want to change. And usually it's a hassle.
That's what happened at these parties?
Yeah, and then white students are good about these things. They just want any kind of music and they would dance,
mm-hmm.
And that was good. But, I mean, I had a couple of parties where people would bring their tapes, play these, and it's always, it was a terrible experience.
Really?
I mean, not terrible. I mean, no, terrible is a serious word to use. No, it was just like there's a little pressure of trying to please everybody at the same time. And it can ruin your evening if you really...
What kind of music did African students bring?
They would play African music, upbeat kind of, like high life music, West African music, and any music that they can dance to. And rhythmically, it's different from, like American music or Afro-American music. Rhythmically is based on the same, but it's a slower, say by 2 beats or 3 beats,
Yeah.
African is faster by 3 beats than the Afro-American music. Therefore, you would move or dance differently.
That's interesting.
Yeah, than that. And also nostalgia, I think. Africans, they tend to.
Yeah.
They want to listen to their music and pretend they're home.
So you threw some of these parties?
Yes, last summer we threw about 2 parties in my place. It was fun.
Did they ever get pretty wild?
Not wild. Everybody's friendly. It's.
No, I mean, did neighbors ever complain about the noise?
No. That's the only thing good about my place. We could have parties until early in the morning and they would not complain.
Uh-huh.
Because they were younger also, and then when they have their parties, we wouldn't complain. So it was cooperation, in that sense.
Uh-huh.
But actually talking about white Americans or American students being, that's what I think it should. I think 2 things should be done about the Center for Development. It's either they really put a requirement. I know it might be, there might be some problems there, but they should put as a requirement that you should have work government experience or something like that of 3 years or so. So when students come, you know, they would be in the same kind of environment and they know what they're talking about. Uh-huh. And because if you are young and you go into Center for Development, the students you would be dealing with, you know, you feel lonely because everybody is coming from a different background, and it's you talk to them,
yeah,
you try to be friendly, but it's nothing that you know in deep in your heart that it's nothing that you really can extend out of the school. They're not the kind of people you would call. That's how I felt personally.
Yeah.
Call in the evening and say, you want to go to Amy's or something like that? No.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or they should also encourage, you know, American students to enroll in those, in the Center for Development.
Well, there are American students.
There are, but they're very...
classes, right?
Yeah, but, you know, most of them, they go to land tenure.
Right.
And they go to agriculture economics.
Yeah.
And they go to environmental studies.
Yeah.
And all these departments,
yeah,
they're basically teaching what the Center for Development is doing.
But they're different classes?
They're different. Oh, no. I mean, these people, they go and meet in the same classes.
That,
the,
yeah.
You know, the, they're just different departments.
Uh-huh.
People are enrolling in different way. I mean, in different departments. But they're taking the same classes.
So they were in your physical classes.
Oh yeah.
There.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you weren't allowed to enroll in the center, in the land tenure center?
No, I didn't. I could have if I had known about it, you know, that there was a land tenure department.
Oh, you could have. There are foreign students.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of foreign students enrolled there. Or I could enroll in agriculture, economics, you know.
I see. So the Center for Development is a special thing.
It's a special, they train, I would say, actually, it's basically for foreign students who are interested in third world development. So they attract them through Center for Development, but they send them through to these departments.
I see.
You know?
Now it's a little clearer.
Yeah.
Let me ask you if you've traveled at all.
In Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin? For instance, or to Chicago?
Yes, I went to Chicago. I went to St. Paul. I went to Milwaukee. I went to La Crosse, but because there is a Sudanese family there, so I went to visit them. That's all.
What were your experiences traveling?
I mean, I traveled to Chicago, but I really wouldn't say that I know Chicago very well because I know an Afro-American lady who actually showed me Chicago from her experience, from her way. So I was only on the south side, but not the deep south.
Just a second.
Yeah.
This is side two of tape number three with the Quay Mall Wall, June 16th. Now you were saying...
Yeah, that I went to Chicago on the south side, I think. But, I mean, I know it was a good experience, really, to see that area and talk to people there. I mean, I went there, I went to Louis Farrakhan's, you know, mosque. I went to get through the Push headquarters, you know, listened to Jesse Jackson.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And I was excited to do all these things. But also I wanted to go in to the other side, to say go to downtown Chicago and see, you know. But then I learned that, you know, the racial tension and nobody was willing. I mean, they were willing, but then they weren't really, I would be forcing them to really go downtown or go to white areas or white neighborhoods when I know they would not feel secure or they would not feel like they really they just didn't feel like, you know, they should be there, you know, they didn't feel like they're part of that area.
The Afro-American woman?
Yeah.
Was...
Not the woman, I mean, she didn't tell me this, you know, but from the talking, from the what I gathered, you know, from their neighborhood, it would be, I didn't want to force her, you know, to take me to downtown Chicago or something like, or where she would feel uncomfortable.
Right.
Not because somebody was harassing her, but just because of her experience, maybe with the city, or the politics of the city. You know how Chicago is. So I really didn't go downtown Chicago. I only went once,
uh-huh.
And but I would like to go and just hang around and see. Yeah.
Hello?
I thought I would make a few general comments about Akwae's testimony over the course of his two interviews. I think it's clear that Akwae is an extremely genial person, and it's surprising the degree to which he speaks English and is comfortable in that language. One of the things that is most evident about Akwae is how at home he is in American culture. For a foreign student, for an African student, or foreign student in general, he shows a remarkable ability to blend in, to participate in sports, which is an area of the academic environment here at the university that many foreign students really never know. One can go further and say that in his attitude to education, he breaks the stereotype of a foreign student, and that, in my opinion, he more closely resembles a typical undergraduate American student in his attitude to learning than he does a typical, if there is such a thing, foreign student. These are very large generalizations, and there are many, many exceptions, but one has to realize that although it's surprising that a graduate student in a master's program like Akwae is satisfied with doing B and B minus work overall, is not as unusual as we might imagine for many undergraduates. Many undergraduates in this university are also satisfied in doing B or B minus work. The fact that Akwae is 29 years old makes this a little bit unusual, but it's wise to remember that Akwae is young in terms of his experience in American culture. I think it might very well be that there comes a threshold point that you have to reach to be at home in American culture, and it's usually reached after a good many years in this country. Most foreign students and most African students don't really reach that point. For somebody like Akwae, who went to school at Santa Barbara for his undergraduate before coming here, he really doesn't have the experience of having gone to high school here, as well as college, or having grown up here. So he doesn't have a whole life of learning what parts of American culture to accept and what parts of American culture to reject that would perhaps make him seem like a more typical 29-year-old American graduate student. Instead, he seems a little bit younger than his age. Akwae breaks several stereotypes in the sense that he's not what one would expect. Another stereotype he breaks is of the foreign student on scholarship. There are many, many foreign students who wouldn't be able to attend here unless they were on scholarship. But there's also another type of student, whether from Africa or from other places, who's able, through his parents' position of influence, power, or wealth in their own country, to attend school in the United States. This points to an important feature for many African students here, and that is that they are much more important in their own societies than a typical American graduate student is in the United States. Many of them, nevertheless, can't afford to attend school in Europe, the United States without financial aid. Akwae is not in that situation. His father is undoubtedly an extremely prominent man in the Sudan as the editor of the main or even only opposition paper in English in Khartoum. At the same time, it would be wrong to view his father as an immensely wealthy man. Newspaper journalists the world over are probably not among countries' most financially well-off citizens, but still, it is unusual that his father is simply paying for Kwe's education. This again makes him similar, in a sense, to many American students going to school at this university. It's wise to admit up front that Kwe's attitude to many programs and many components of the university is not particularly positive, and that what he's gotten out of the university is something that many foreign students don't get out of it. He's gotten a cultural education of a sort. He dislikes the Center for Development, I think, probably because it blocked him off from other American students and put him in a group specifically designed for foreign students. The Center for Development is apparently more of a professional training ground for foreign students than it is an academic program, in the sense that an agricultural economics program would be, or even the Land Tenure Center. At the same time, we can take his attitude to the foreign student's office with a grain of salt. It's difficult to penetrate exactly what's behind that criticism without simply taking him at his word or having lived in the Sudan, but it's possible to take a guess. My guess would be that the type of relationships that obtain between staff and students in Khartoum or in any Sudanese institution are facilitated by personal relationships in the way that they're not in this university. This means that if you were in a position to attend a university in your own means in the Sudan, you would probably also know people in the office who would understand that you were who you were, and if you said you could pay, you could pay. Akwe was not trying to trick anybody by saying that he could pay. He was undoubtedly telling the truth. What he had trouble with is the idea that he had to follow proper protocol and collect all the forms that, while not necessary to his particular situation, were in general necessary for students to collect. And it seems to me that he had trouble accepting this. This tape and testimony is useful in a number of ways. Primarily, it's useful because it shows how an adaptable, flexible African student can fit in with university life in the face of initial cultural adversity. As an example, Akwe's problem with the Saxony was that they made him sign a year-long lease. Obviously, the idea of a student who doesn't know their way around campus being forced to sign a year-long lease is offensive to Akwe, and may very well be offensive to anyone from Akwe's general background in the Sudan for cultural reasons that we can't entirely understand. But that doesn't invalidate the criticism. It may be that institutions like the Saxony, or like the Center for Development, or like the Foreign Students Office should think about some of the criticisms that Akwe is offering, if not to deal with them on their own terms, at least to explain clearly why it's important to sign a lease for a year, why it's important to get the necessary documents, and so forth. Finally, Akwe very specifically and repeatedly addressed the issue of Black American students in the perception of African students as he saw it. I think that this is useful in part because Akwe is unusually forthcoming, and we can't accept his opinion as representing the opinion of all African students, but at the same time, I believe that it is probably true that African students feel this sort of dual polar pull from Afro-American students on the one hand, who want to treat them as part of their world, and from white students on the other hand, who view them simply as other. this is, if nothing else, a useful commentary on the racial situation on campus from somebody who is a mediator between the various groups of people.